to the Devils in the Details radio show live on SkidRowStudios.com. Here's your host, Juan Russell.
Welcome to the Devils in the Details radio show once again. Thank you for joining me here. We have a beautiful day here in downtown Los Angeles. And, of course, I'm here live in Skid Row Studios, of course, on SkidRowStudios.com. Now, let's see. All right. Now, I hope you, of course, my name is Wyme Russell. Now, I have to cover that, of course. So, my name is Wyme Russell. And if you don't know that, or if you haven't listened to the show, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. And I hope you find this show with an open mind, because you are certainly going to need it. Now, you can always call into the show. Please do at 1-800-893-9562. Share any thoughts or feelings you have about what I'll be discussing today. Today is a very earth-shattering topic. Now, this is, of course, if you haven't heard this information, it will be quite earth-shattering for you. But I do have to get in a quick message from last week. I did get an email, and it's, we get emails from time to time, and sometimes they are positive, but this one was an actual complaint, although it was very nice. Let's just say, let's call her Marianne R., from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she's quoted that I stated on the last show that I was trying to sell conspiracy theories to children. And I listened back to the show, and I made a comment that one of the definitions that I gave was for the kids, or that the show was for the kids. Now, she misunderstood that, and obviously, I am not here trying to sell conspiracy theories to your children. This show is for everybody, and I just want to let you know that my age demographic is 8 to 80, so and that's pretty wide, right? But we have to aim for as many people as possible. So 8 to 80 here on the Devils in the Details. We're not cutting anybody out, and we're certainly not trying to sell any conspiracy theories to your children. But thank you, Marianne, for listening. We do need, and or downloading, and we do need your help here on the Devils in the Details. Now, so today, again, guys, this is fatal information. We are revisiting 9/11 and the U.S. government's official story. And today we are visiting the morning of 9/11, Washington, D.C., the site just moments prior to the Pentagon attack. So here we go. So kiss me and smile for me. All right, thank you. That is the Gimme Gimmies. Good stuff, guys. So here we go. So I always have to say that this show is dedicated to the victims and survivors of the attacks. Now, the only reason I do this show is for the victims and survivors of any attack, but certainly 9/11, and my respect goes to you and your families, and I certainly don't mean any disrespect with what I'm saying today. Let's start with this. So I'd like to preface the show with a thought. So I want to put a thought in your head, all right? So imagine you or I were on trial for any crime. It makes no difference whatsoever. And imagine that the body of evidence that I'm going to try to lay out for you today, or unanswered questions, was being used in a case against you, or I, of course. I want you to ask yourself, would you be found guilty if what I'm going to express or share with you was used against you? Now, I'll let you be the judge of that, of course, and I'll let you be the judge of the information that I'm providing, and always do your own research, and please look this stuff up, because it is much needed to know information. Now, I welcome you all to the case of American Airlines Flight 77, and that was the flight that was reportedly hijacked by five armed men with box cutters and was flown directly into the Pentagon. Now, that attack resulted in the deaths of 59 passengers, five hijackers, and 125 personnel inside of the building. Obviously, we all know the official account. We saw, we are told that a plane was hijacked, flew a huge circle, and went straight and low right into the side of the Pentagon. That is certainly what we were told. Now, I am going to share some information from a investigation team called Citizen Investigation Team. And if you haven't referenced that, I'm going to give you the information where to find them. But we're going to have some opening remarks today from Mr. Craig Ranke, and he is the lead investigator there at the Citizen Investigation Team. And so let's listen to the opening remarks from Mr. Craig Ranke.
In the following presentation, we will expose to you independent verifiable evidence proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the 9/11 attack was a state-sponsored, false flag black operation involving a carefully planned and skillfully executed deception at the Pentagon. Relying on detailed interviews with eyewitnesses to the event, the flight path of the jet that allegedly struck the Pentagon and was seen flying treetop level over Arlington that day is conclusively established. As you will see, this flight path is very different from what the government reports, and we will explain the significance of this discrepancy momentarily. But first, we'll go over what initially made people suspicious of this event.
All right, so we received that information. That is, of course, Craig Ranke himself. Mr. Craig Ranke and Aldo Marquis make up the Citizen Investigation Team. Now, most of the information you hear today can be referenced and further studied at citizeninvestigationteam.com, and I urge you to go there. That is one of the greatest sites or the best sites for the discovery into what possibly happened that day at the Pentagon. Now, another source of today's presentation is the Pilots for 9/11 Truth. Now, I know I've mentioned them on the show before. We should mention them on every show that we do here. That is an amazing organization. And with the Citizen Investigation Team combined, they have, in my opinion, won a Nobel Peace Prize each. And these two groups have actually corroborated their information, brought their investigations together, and they independently corroborate each other, and that is amazing. So, you know, they really have changed the world. Now, this information is world-changing, but nobody wants to listen, especially a government or somebody who could be held accountable, right? So, in 2006, the Pilots for 9/11 Truth, by way of the Freedom of Information Act, received and analyzed data from the flight data recorders from Flight 77. So a lot of the times you'll hear that these planes melted or just disappeared. And that is not the case, obviously, because the government came up with, or the NTSB, which is the National Traffic, the National Transportation Safety Board, came up with the black boxes. And this black box data, which is encoded, was actually provided to the Pilots for 9/11 Truth through the Freedom of Information Act. So they used all this information to compute G-forces and to just monitor or just to verify what exactly happened to the plane. And one of the things they discovered, and of course we can't elaborate on the math because these are geniuses, and I am certainly am not. But the physics of the flight required, the physics of the flight, meaning how low it was, how fast it had to be going. In short, of course, to simplify it, they found it mathematically impossible. So if that intrigues you, please go to Pilots for 9/11 Truth and start referencing and start learning this information. Now, the NTSB provided this data, and it also includes the altimeter adjustment errors that leave the plane at the Pentagon above the Pentagon and not slamming into it. So we discussed that on the first show, very first show of Devils in the Details, and that was the show on 9/11. That was the five smoking guns of 9/11. Well, that altimeter adjustment is indeed a smoking gun, because what happened was, is, you know, by the government's own provided information, when the plane went up, you saw the altimeter's correction. And what the altimeter is a correction to judge the altitude based on barometric pressure. Now, I've only learned that through investigating what it is, but that has something to do with the weather and how planes judge the distance to the ground. The altimeter is a major smoking gun, and that's who discovered it, Pilots for 9/11 Truth, and it was not readjusted on descent. So when they went up, they made the correction in the altimeter. The correct altitude was judged and everything was fine. On the way down, all pilots are supposed to make the same correction. And that correction was not made. And the NTSB provided that information, and that correction wasn't made. So what that does, the result of that error in their provided information means that the plane was too high to strike the Pentagon. Now, that corresponds with everything that we're talking about today with the Citizen Investigation Team, or the CIT. Pardon me. That's a long thing to say, so I'm just going to call it the CIT. All right, so here we go. The flight path data does not correspond with the flight path damage. That is key with dealing with the Pentagon, because it is not the same situation that you're dealing with in the World Trade Center, where obviously the planes went into the buildings and then the buildings were demolished around the planes, or obviously the planes were blown to smithereens as the building came down. But the flight path at the Pentagon is important because it locks the government into a specific trajectory. So it means that they had to be in a specific spot, in a specific place to cause the damage path. Okay, and what that corresponds to are light poles. Okay, and of course the direction that it actually aimed into the building, but light poles were actually knocked down, and of course we all know that there were five downed light poles. So in order for the plane to have flown on the south side, which is we'll get to that. That is the official story, or low and level, and hit those poles and fly directly into the building. They're locked into a specific data set or specific information that was supposed to be on that flight data recorder, and let me tell you that it wasn't. So let me say one thing. Whether it's tampered information, we're not going to speculate that. They don't speculate that, but they know that the information is not correct based on where they tell us the plane actually flew. So the Pentagon, unlike World Trade Center, the Pentagon was not televised. So we've never seen a plane hit the Pentagon. And I have to ask you, here in America, you have to ask yourself, why? Why would we never see a plane or video evidence hitting the Pentagon? It's an amazing question. It's a valid question. The most secure building in the world, in the photograph damaged areas, if you look at the damaged areas at the Pentagon, you see multiple roof-mounted cameras. I mean, they're right there. They're in plain sight. I mean, you can see multiple cameras. Now, those cameras would have had no other vantage point than to stare directly into the alleged, the plane coming at them. They were looking right at it. If they're not down at the side of the building, wherever those cameras are pointed, they were in the right spot to either see the plane coming in or videotape the actual impact. But those videotapes do not exist. And if anybody has access to that or has seen that, please provide that, because that is what has not been provided. And I tell you, the only video that we have seen from the Pentagon, and there is one out there, it is a choppy, frame-by-frame, odd-angle security gate, video that everybody points to and says, well, there's proof that a Pentagon or the 757 or Flight 77 slammed into the Pentagon. Here it is. Now, I urge you to stare at that, study that, watch that thing as slow as you can, which is frame by frame, and you only have a few frames to choose from. I mean, why are we dealing with slideshow-type technology? Why are we flip-booking the testimony to what's removing our freedoms, if you understand that? Why are we doing something frame by frame when we live in the world of high-res video? Even in 2001, it was certainly better than what we're seeing in that silly video, security gate video. Now, interesting on that video was the date was inaccurate. That's always pointed out. Why was the date inaccurate? Who knows? Why would they? There's no answer for that. And the time was incorrect. So, was this, I certainly don't want to speculate, but tell me. I mean, think about that. What do you... how could you answer that? So the government, all they really have to do is show us the tapes. That's it. So, all of these investigations would go away. The questions would go away if they would just provide the tapes. Now, let's take a little deeper look. So that was kind of a basic, right? A little basic information on the anomalies or issues. And we know where to find our investigation information. But now we're going to look a little deeper into what the government exactly let us know or revealed to us from their own provided information. Now, the government refuses to comment on anything found in the multiple investigations, either CIT or Pilots for 9/11 Truth. So let's revisit Mr. Norman Mineta's testimony in front of the 9/11 Commission. This is just a short one.
During the time that the airplane coming in to the Pentagon, there was a young man who would come in and say to the vice president, the plane is 50 miles out. The plane is 30 miles out. And when it got down to the plane is 10 miles out, the young man also said to the vice president, do the orders still stand? And the vice president turned and whipped his neck around and said, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
All right, so we all remember Norman Mineta testifying before the 9/11 Commission. And what did any of that mean, I ask you? Remember, Bush and Cheney refused to testify about 9/11 under oath. And they refused to have their comments recorded and or published. Now, why would they do that? If our president and vice president or government in whole was surprised on the day of 9/11, why would their reaction be not wanting to investigate it or not wanting to speak about it under oath or not allowing their questions to be removed from the room in which they were asked? You know, I ask you, they didn't even allow the reporters to remove their pads. They said you can ask questions, you can write your notes down, but you have to remember them and leave the pads on the chair. Now, is this the reaction of a government that was surprised or shocked, you know, on the morning of 9/11? There's never been a surprised reaction from anybody in our government or the New York City government for that matter. They all seem to be like, okay, now we're going. You know, we're doing the agenda. We're doing the operation. We're all doing what we're supposed to do. You know, there were faces of shock in those crowds, but the people in charge, I want you to go back and look at that. There's no real surprise there. And why did the president and the vice president not, testify under oath? It's ridiculous. So I feel the president and the vice president absolve themselves of their responsibility for not protecting you or us or the victims. They just said, you know what, we're not responsible for that. We don't have to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. So we are not. Wow. And unfortunately, the current administration has that same, opinion or that same feeling. I mean, we're all still locked out of asking any questions about 9/11, which is crazy. So, 9/11, you have to ask. And why the Obama administration wouldn't embrace these investigations? Think about it. If the Democrats and the Republicans are such sworn enemies, opposite sides of the aisle, holding up the government because either side can't, agree. And if they're so dramatically different, then, why isn't Obama jumping on this? And why doesn't the Obama administration, investigate these matters? Well, just that fact alone may prove to you that both parties are identical and are working together. And I've told you that before on the show, that I believe there is no left or right or Democrat or Republican. It is just all one power command structure. So every war, every law, every limit to your freedom is being perpetrated as a result of 9/11. So please, this information is important and you have to worry about this. I mean, you have to worry about what was done. The event is over. So the horror, the shock is gone. And now you can just sit down and kind of unwrap the layers and try to find out exactly what happened. So that's what we're doing. So the victory for Osama, if you think about it, every time they pull an NDAA or a Patriot Act or another, or drones now in America, our planet terror war, the NDAA, said the entire planet is a battlefield. All of that is a result of 9/11. And Osama and his box cutter wielding army, right? The victories keep coming. It hasn't stopped. So in 9/11, you think that they were successful then? Well, it hasn't stopped because our freedoms are continuously being taken away. So finding the motive. So now let's look at a motive. So if we're in a little, if you're thinking in your mind, if this evidence was used against me, would I be held guilty? Well, you always have to look for a motive in why crimes occur. And there is a motive at the Pentagon. Now, finding one motive for 9/11 is impossible. We all know that. There are plenty of motives, like putting in place the 100-year war, as outlined in the PNAC document, how to rebuild America's defenses from the Project for a New American Century. Now, that is commonly covered in 9/11 circles, but that's something you have to know about. The PNAC created a document entitled How to Rebuild America's Defenses, and it was just expressed with, 100-year wars and how to rebuild our military structure, and we need a new catalyst like a new Pearl Harbor, and then all of this could actually occur, everything in their plan. And it was the same people who the day of 9/11 were stating this is like a new Pearl Harbor. I mean, it was their own wording, so it's criminal, people. But I think a lot of the motives had to possibly do, and everybody had their different motives in 9/11. So whatever location it was, whatever was happening, there were multiple motives. One of the ones I'd like to mention possibly was the rebuilding of the World Trade Center site from scratch, right? I.e. Larry Silverstein, one of our favorite guys here on The Devil's in the Details. Now, of course, the wars, the oil, all of that, that is all a result of 9/11, and we have to keep moving forward on trying to find out exactly what happened. So now, let's look at the motive here at the Pentagon. So the motive had to do with missing money. Money drives all evils. Well, money drove 9/11. Of course, money breeds power, and of course, 9/11 was the ultimate grab for money, power, and control, because control is the ultimate outcome. It's really what they want from their money, their power. They want control. So they get the money, they get the power, then they get the control. Much like Scarface's philosophy there. Now, so the motive is money. Let's listen to the then Defense Secretary, Donald Rumsfeld, okay? And this is Donald Rumsfeld from September 10th, 2001. September 10th, so the day before September 11th. Let's check out Rumsfeld.
The day before 9/11, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld declared war, not on foreign terrorists.
The adversary is closer to home. It's the Pentagon bureaucracy.
He said money wasted by the military poses a serious threat.
In fact, it could be said that it's a matter of life and death.
Rumsfeld promised change, but the next day, the world changed, and in the rush to fund the war on terrorism, the war on waste seems to have been forgotten.
My 03 budget calls for more than $48 billion in new defense spending.
More money for the Pentagon when its own auditors admit the military cannot account for 25% of what it already spends.
According to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
$2.3 trillion, with a T.
Trillion dollars. So our government, or the Pentagon, was personally missing trillions of dollars, and that was made, that was all noted September 10th, 2001. So Rumsfeld, if you want to really get down to the bottom of what the whole motive was, or how, what, where the money came from, well, we got to kind of have an answer for that too. And you got to get ready for this because it's deep. Now, it was from the plundering of the Soviet Union. Right. Of course, obviously other nefarious acts, but it mainly came around 91, obviously, when the then seated George Bush one, of course, created what was called Project Hammer. We'll kind of get into that in a moment. But the location of the impact at the Pentagon was key, and it was decisive in defining the motive, the location where the plane hit. All right. So that was important. So the office that was hit was the Office of Naval Intelligence, which had just been relocated to the new anti-terrorism reinforced part of the building. Another 9/11 coincidence. Imagine if that plane had hit any other part of that building that wasn't, just reconstructed with their anti-terrorism, glass and whatever they did to it. The death toll would have been a lot higher. I mean, they could have maybe destroyed half of the building. It hit a specific part of that building that had just been recently refurbished for anti-terrorism, to be able to be hit by a terrorist. Now, how did they get that funding for that? Where did that all come from? Was from the Oklahoma City bombing. Ah, so one hand washes the other, right? We covered the Oklahoma City bombing on a prior episode. Please listen to that. But the you know, that created legislation that then got the Pentagon and all these federal buildings upgraded for, you know, anti-terrorism efforts. Now, it hit directly into that part of the building. They called it the catcher's mitt. And you hear that all the time. They dubbed it the catcher's mitt. Very interesting thing to call it, right? So the Office of Naval Intelligence suffered 39 fatalities out of 40 in the office that day. And those are the facts they give us. So I imagine that out of obviously 40 people in the office, 39 died. So they lost almost the entire staff they had there, the complete chain of command, you know, all the records, computers, obviously all of that was also destroyed. Among many of the investigations happening in the office was the investigation of Project Hammer, okay? Now, Project Hammer, the information on motive comes to us by way of alienscientist.com. We have mentioned him on the show before. That is great investigatory work there by Alien Scientist. Strange name, great guy, and you do have to look at his work. It is amazing. Now, let's listen to Alien Scientist himself explain about Operation Hammer. Now, here we go.
In September 1991, shortly after the end of the Cold War, a cabal of elite bankers and intelligence spooks led by George H.W. Bush financed a $240 billion covert operations war chest through the purchase of 10-year securities that, as it happened, were scheduled to come due on September 12, 2001. Project Hammer was undoubtedly used for a wide variety of illicit intelligence operations, but mainly it was used to finance a covert economic operation against the collapsing Soviet Union. A spectacular investment for all, at least until money laundering investigations began tracing all the money, or when the 10-year deadline came up and the securities became due and began the routine process of authenticity and ownership checks. Evidence shows that several federal and private investigations had already stumbled upon the Hammer Fund and were compiling evidence on it up until the 9/11 attacks. These included the Office of Naval Intelligence, or ONI, which was moved to the outer E-ring of the recently renovated section of the Pentagon that was targeted and destroyed on 9/11.
Right, so he reaffirms where it was hit. And also enlightens us on Project Hammer, which was a pool of money to become available, an investment pool of money. Now, that is some economic stuff that you have to look into on what exactly Project Hammer was. But it was becoming available September 12, 2001, and it was set up by George Bush 1, right? So now imagine all this stuff is being used against you. So let's just think about that for a second. So just a few of these things. So man, you had some dealings in a Project Hammer, and they got some investigation work on you, and then you allegedly, you know, flew a plane into a building to destroy all the people inside to destroy the evidence about your case. Yeah. So you would be involved in the case of the century of the universe. Yet nobody will listen to this information, and there hasn't been a case to hold anyone accountable so far. So the money was being investigated by the ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, and it was trillions of dollars. Rummy mentions it the day before 9/11, or that these trillions of dollars were missing, and that they were looking for them. So motive at the Pentagon, and we're gonna call it a motive, was to hide the records and do away with anyone motivated about finding missing money. So they didn't like these guys prying around. And there were other investigations too, and you can find that on alienscientist.com. But a motive that made sense to me was certainly this Project Hammer, where all the dates fit and all the conspirators certainly fit, being designed by the first George Bush. Now, the motive, that's all speculation. You know, we're speculating, but of course, there is evidence. So let's just take a quick look at the evidence, and let's look at the North Side approach. Now, that is key, and if that's the first time you're hearing about it, this is important, because in the citizen investigation team's work came up with this North Side approach. Now, this is in combination with Pilots for 9/11 Truth, a government-supplied flight data recorder, and 84th Radar Evaluation Unit radar data. And they call that RADES data, R-A-D-E-S. And that data tells us, the RADES data tells us all the planes in the sky at the time of the attack and their movements. Okay, so you can reference all the details, of course, in a documentary film provided by Pilots for 9/11 Truth entitled Attack on the Pentagon. You have to see that. It will explain everything I'm talking about here today. Now, the official story locks Flight 77 into a specific trajectory and damage path. Those, you know, as I stated, the light poles and the level so-called south side approach. So let's listen to, once again, Mr. Craig Ranke explain this north side approach. Here we go.
In the final seconds before the alleged impact, a plane on the officially required flight path would have flown south of Columbia Pike, south of the Navy Annex, and south of the former Citgo gas station at all times. As it turned out, the eyewitnesses reported the complete opposite, proving the plane did not hit the building and that the physical damage had to have been staged. 13 eyewitnesses from the 5 most critical vantage points unanimously confirmed the plane crossed to the north side of Columbia Pike, flew directly over the Navy Annex, and north of the former Citgo gas station, irrefutably contradicting all official reports, released data, and all physical damage alleged to have been caused by the plane.
Right, so if all those buildings and street names don't make sense to you, the north and south approach in this context are delineated by a street, and it's called Columbia Pike. So if you look at a map of the Pentagon area, you'll see Columbia Pike as a street that leads directly towards the Pentagon, and it kind of, you know, is facing it. And then it kind of curves around a gas station, then onto a freeway. Now, the official story and damage path, which had the plane, which the plane had to fly, right, because we're locked into the light poles. The businesses, the Naval Annex, the former Citgo gas station, which is what we'll be talking about, and Arlington National Cemetery, they all had witnesses that spotted the plane on the north side. Eyewitnesses. Eyewitnesses used in a case against you would put you in prison. Okay, there are 13 of them that showed this plane on the or swore that this plane was on the north side of the gas station, and the it was a Citgo gas station. They called it the former Citgo gas station. Now, if you use that as a center for the right and left the south and north approach theories, the gas station separates it. Okay, so it either flew on one side of the gas station or the other side of the gas station, okay? And one is the south side approach and one is the north side approach. Now, every witness that the citizen investigation team found that they stated that the plane flew on the north side. The north side, not the south side. All right, so let's take a look at these witnesses. Let's see what exactly they claim they saw. And of course, you can find this in all the films I mentioned, but let's take a look at the witnesses. Here we go. All right. Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate that. Very good. Now, one of the witnesses we have to talk about is Officer William Lagasse, okay? And William Lagasse was a Pentagon police officer who was in his cruiser at the former Citgo gas station and testified to the library, he testified to the Library of Congress, and he was interviewed by the citizen investigation team. Now, Officer Lagasse states, and there's no reason for this man to lie. There's absolutely no reason for it. He's employed by the Pentagon. He's a police officer. He's an upstanding person. There's no reason for this man to lie. So his eyewitness testimony stated that he saw the plane on the north side of the gas station. The north side, period. That he couldn't see through the gas station, and he certainly wasn't facing the south side of Columbia Pike or the gas station. And he swears on his life that the plane flew on the north side of the gas station. So if somebody in court, an eyewitness, swears on their life that they saw you do a specific thing, you're gone, folks. So this is credible eyewitness evidence and testimony, and that would convict anybody. But he also claims that, as most witnesses do, that he feels the plane crash. So these people, they state they saw it on the north side, but they also claim that they didn't see the impact. So the witnesses claim they were either running for their lives or they were just, or they flinched, or they weren't looking at the plane actually going in. They all say they saw the plane, but they none of them actually claim they saw the impact. But the witnesses do testify, all of them, to seeing the plane flying on the north side of Columbia Pike and north of the gas station. They also agree on a bank the plane made as the plane came in. Now, there's no way the plane could bank if it had that low-level approach. And this is key. And you have to watch the film. You have to listen to the witnesses in their own words describing this bank all the same way, which means the plane came over what was called the Naval Annex, which is a, you know, federal building there. It flew over the Naval Annex. They all saw it. They all testified to that. They saw it bank. And then they saw it fly towards the Pentagon. Then they saw the fireball. So they assume that it hit. But most of them claim that they were running for their lives. So they also claim that there was a gunning of the engine, a throttling up. So they said they saw it bank, and then they heard this throttling up. And the throttling up coincides and kind of makes has the flyover theory makes sense. So essentially, the key is the bank. Of course, that cancels out the low and level approach, you know, and it was way too high based on the altimeter for it to hit the building. But very interesting that these people did see it low enough to possibly, or an aircraft low enough to possibly hit the Pentagon. Now, the gunning of the engines also fits the flyover. We covered that, which also is corroborated by the altimeter discovery. The fact that upon the descent, the altimeter was not reset. Is criminal. I mean, they have to answer for that. The anomalies in the FDR data can only mean it has somehow been tampered with by the agency that provided it. So let's hear what Sergeant Legassi. Yeah, we got time. So let's hear what Sergeant Legassi had to say about what he saw on the morning of 9/11. These are his own words, and so let's hear from Sergeant Legassi.
Where did you see the plane coming from exactly? What direction did you see it approaching?
Well, I saw it, like I said, from right about where those transformers are.
Yeah.
That's the first place I saw it. Cleared all these lampposts, or cleared all the light posts.
So it was heading towards you coming from Arlington Cemetery over there?
No. It was heading from left to right. It came from FOB2 area.
So you're saying it was it came from to the north side of the Navy Annex even?
Yes. Okay. Now what it did before uh-huh. Those transformers, mm-hmm. I don't know, because that's the first place I really saw it. It was right there. But it was not coming towards me. It was coming from left to right or from east or from west to east.
That stone fence that we just zoomed in on over there is the fence to the Arlington National Cemetery.
Yes.
And as far as you could tell, the fuselage was over that.
Yeah, best estimate, that's about where the fuselage was.
And how high was it at that time?
About 100, 150 feet AGO.
All right, now, how sure are you that the plane was to the north, coming from the north side of the Navy Annex? You're saying it was pretty much between the Navy Annex and Arlington Cemetery? How right certain are you of that?
100%. Bet my life on it.
So there you go. Sergeant Legassi, in his own words, 100% he'd bet his life on the fact that he saw that plane on the north side of the gas station, which contradicts the official story. Now, and if it flew, remember, folks, if it flew on the north side of the gas station, it could not hit the light poles. So if all of these people are telling the truth, how did the light poles go down? I ask you. I also want to ask you, how did the building shatter and how did the plane shatter into a million pieces, but the light poles were merely bent? They were knocked off their hinges, so to speak. They were knocked off their little bolts. They didn't shatter. They didn't splinter or fly away for a mile, you know. Think about it. 500-mile-an-hour plane, allegedly, slamming into light poles, and they just bend over. They bend, and they just fall down, just fall right next to where they were knocked off. That makes absolutely no sense, because the plane then slams into the building and supposedly disintegrates because nobody can find a Boeing at the Pentagon, so... It's amazing that we believe these things. We believe light poles bend, but planes disintegrate. So we all, you know, so anyway, so we should all be under the jail by now. If this evidence was stacked up against us, Lord help us, we would be in San Quentin or wherever the heck they send people like us. Now it's irrelevant for people to just think, okay, this is a point I really wanted to make, that when we say the government orchestrated this, we don't mean the entire government. We don't think all the government is capable with this. You know, we're talking about the Bushes, the Cheneys, the Rumsfelds, you know, the money trusts, the defense contractors, the people of this world who could afford to do it and have the connections to pull it off, right? That's important. Now, when I say the government, I certainly don't mean the entire government, but just elements within it that, you know, certainly need to be brought to justice. Now, I urge you to watch the National Security Alert. That is the film by CIT. And that is important. That is all the witnesses in the North Side information I'm referring to. The Arlington Cemetery witnesses were good. They were key because they gave us that skimming over the top of this naval annex. And if you look at the pictures, then you'll see that the naval annex is this huge building. And they had the plane just skimming the top. Some of them said it even seemed like it was going to land on it. So something was coming in. What was it? I mean, I wish we knew. That's what we're trying to figure out. So if the plane was on the official south side approach, I repeat, the witnesses would not have seen the plane from their location. But the longer the time passes, you know, the longer the time goes by, the less chance we will have to ever see this case in court. So if or ever really for the full story to be revealed, because a lot of these people were elderly even in 2001. So they're all kind of disappearing. And so goes the story or the accountability, right? So one witness is reported to seeing the plane flying from the Pentagon, which is interesting. So there was a witness on the back loading dock or at his station close to the back loading dock at the Pentagon, and he heard the explosion, and he flew out to, you know, take a look. And he saw a commercial jet, and it's all on the film, flying away from the Pentagon. Now, and that certainly wouldn't have been an odd occurrence because it is next to Reagan National Airport, and it is not in the, I think it's called P-56, so, you know, that secure airspace over the Capitol and the White House. It is not part of that. It is across the Potomac in Arlington, and it's next to Reagan National Airport. So planes fly around the Pentagon all day, and it certainly didn't seem odd that this plane could have possibly just been flying away, you know? So just a witness account, if you believe it, hey, it's certainly credible to me, but it raises big questions on, was a plane seen flying away from the Pentagon? Yes. That answer is yes. So, but the longer, okay, so let's see, let's move on. Now, the witness in the film also described, oh, so check this out. So they also described this mysterious C-130 cargo plane. We don't have time to go into the C-130 cargo plane, but there was two other planes in the sky above Washington that day. And it was a C-130 cargo plane and the E-4B, the doomsday plane. And we've all seen that on the news. That's common knowledge. But what were these planes doing there? And, you know, what was their function? We'll never have privilege to that information, but very questionable that E-4B would just let this plane fly its huge circle, you know, the huge donut, and be flown into the Pentagon. Why would the E-4B or the C-130 or whoever allow that? We already know the official story that they didn't have the jets available. Questionable, right? And all the war games that were going on that kept those planes busy. But why did these other two just watch it happen? Because they were in the sky that day. And I'm just speculating that they watched it. But the witnesses are a critical part of the CIT's investigation. You got to see them. If they had 1/10 of the evidence on us, we would be convicted. So remember, the burden of proof is on the government, and it's not on investigators to tell people how any of this happened. The burden is on the government to tell us how it happened, and they failed because everything that they tell us, these investigators completely tear apart, and it's not conspiracy theory, folks. This is actually investigations unwrapping a conspiracy that was done against us all. So let's look at the flight, the pilot, and the disappearing plane. If we can go through this, let's take a quick look. So Flight 77 was loaded with 64 people, including five hijackers. The five hijackers. The plane's reported impact killed all aboard, including 125 inside the Pentagon. Piloting the plane was Charles Burlingame, who himself had prior had participated in an anti-terror or prior 9/11, you know, information. If you look at the movies, he participated in an anti-terrorism exercise that actually simulated flying a jet into the Pentagon. Just another one of those coincidences, right? But Burlingame, he was a good guy. You know, I certainly wouldn't make him a conspirator. But a point I'd like to make about Burlingame is that he may have been on that plane for a reason, right? That's what they claim, that maybe they were trying to get rid of these people. I always have to preface that it is speculation, of course. But we have to ask these questions. Now, the flight took off 33% capacity. What flight takes off 33% capacity? But most of the planes that on 9/11 were that capacity. That's questionable. We were told Hani Hanjour took control of the aircraft, a 757, and he hijacked it, of course, with his minions, and they steered it back towards the Pentagon. Now, Hani Hanjour, we all know, wasn't even able to pass his Cessna's pilot license. Look into Hani Hanjour and his abilities to fly a 757. I don't think he had them. Yet he was able to pull off. Now, this acrobatic 330-degree, we've all seen that, looping aero maneuver that was almost impossible to even the most qualified pilots. I mean, not even to, you know, not, I mean, stunt pilots would have a problem pulling that thing off in 757 if it was even possible, right? But the sweeping turn over the Pentagon left the plane exposed for interception. You know, and remember, Cheney and Mineta are sitting down in the bunker, and, you know, they got these shoot down orders, you know, and they had the guy coming back and forth saying it's 10 miles out, you know, 20 miles out. So, you know, shoot down orders were happening. E-4Bs were flying around, yet this thing just came right down the north side of Columbia Pike, right off the naval annex, the top of the naval annex to the north side of Sitco. Gunned its engines, and I would have to speculate, launched something into the Pentagon and flew right over it. That is the outcome of what we're discussing today, and I have a feeling that they are pretty accurate in their assessments. Now, the sweeping turn over the Pentagon, it left him open for like four or five minutes, just hanging there, you know, flying, making a big turn, and he could have easily been blown out of the sky. But he wasn't, because we have determined that Cheney didn't have a shoot down order. It was a stand down order to let whatever was coming towards the Pentagon hit it. We covered that in the first episode. Please take a listen to that. But Cheney certainly wasn't trying to shoot anything down, you know, because whatever hit was coming hit it. So pilots for 9/11 Truth analyzed this flight data recorder and the RADES data, as I mentioned, and verified. So there we are. So it's the corroboration of these two teams coming together. So the eyewitnesses, okay, from CIT corroborate the FDR data and the RADES data from 9/11 Truth. So when one side saw what, when 9/11 pilots for 9/11 Truth saw what, CIT was doing, they came together. And then when you look at it, they corroborate each other. So the radar data shows the north side approach, not a south side. On the radar data from the flight data recorder, it is a north side approach. When they provided the data to, I believe it's Rob Balsamo from the pilots for 9/11 Truth, it was encoded. So Boeing encodes it, and it's proprietary, and you can't, decode it yourself. You can't hack into it. You know, it'll be all messed up. So they the government provided that knowing or understanding that, the pilots for 9/11 Truth couldn't do anything with it unless they had somebody either at Boeing or an expensive independent firm to actually decode it. Now, they actually took that information, and from a diligent citizen who was concerned about what was going on, who worked at one of these places, they got it decoded professionally. So the decoding gives us all of this corroboration to the eyewitness accounts that this plane did not fly on the south side approach, as told us by the government, but on the north side and in or possibly over. Now, another thing you can speculate is that maybe these people didn't see an actual airliner, and what they saw was some sort of winged missile. Just guessing, of course, just guessing, just trying to put the thought out there. But you never know. I mean, a few of the eyewitnesses that aren't in this film that were part of the news broadcast that day mentioned it as a small passenger jet with no windows. Small passenger jet with no windows, winged, flying 500 miles an hour. Yeah. So, okay. So anyway, look into that because that sounds like a missile to me. And if everybody saw, if that's the plane everybody saw, well, you know, they're all kind of assuming possibly, you know, that was a commercial jet, but they all saw it and it all came in on the right, the north side of the gas station. And that is important. So all of the investigations here are corroborating each other. If it was used against us, folks, if any of this information was used against us, we would be certainly under the jail. Now, I also must mention the Ingersoll photographs. So, you know, Jason Ingersoll was a military photographer on the scene, and his photographs served as evidence in the government's case and are available to the public. So I urge you, look into Jason Ingersoll's photographs, and what they are is pre-collapse photographs of the Pentagon and all the damage. And when you see the photos, now this is an investigation into 9/11 that all of us can do. You know, we can't go to Washington. We can't all go to Washington and be harassed like CIT did and Craig Ranke did, you know. But we can do investigations on our own with these photographs. Okay, so Jason Ingersoll, download those. Check them out. And take a look. And tell me if you can find a Boeing, a 757, or any evidence of a 757 hitting that building in those photographs. And if you can, you'd be the first person who is able to do that. And then you need to call me. Okay, we need to talk. But when you look at Ingersoll's photographs, the lawn is untouched. The foundation is undamaged. Now, the building is on fire and smoking, but there is only a 18 to 20 foot wide hole in the front of the Pentagon. And that's a controversial measurement. I know that. But, you know, in the movements or in all the investigations, everyone argues about the diameter or the measurement of this damaged hole and stating that it couldn't fit a Boeing. Oh, yes, it can. No, it can't. It goes back and forth. But listen, 18 to 20 feet wide hole, even if it's 20 feet wide, folks, we're going to, you know what? Let's have fun. So if they claim it's 18 feet, let's make it 40 feet wide. A Boeing is 120 feet wide. A Boeing 757 is 125 feet wide at its wings, 44 feet tall at its tail, and 155 feet long. So even if the hole was 40 feet wide, the plane is not going to fit. The plane does not fit. That is important. Now, look at these photographs. Look at the damage, okay, to the Pentagon. You tell me if you see a plane and if a plane can fit into that hole. Now, what we are told is that the plane is in the hole and that it has disintegrated or was blown into bits and no bits were actually found. But we want to see it. So that is the proof we have, which is absolutely nothing. They say there's a plane in there. Trust me, it broke into millions of pieces because it hit all the columns and there's really nothing to show you. Okay. Now, there are pictures of damage from inside the Pentagon, but none of the parts, you know, plane parts or whatever that was inside the Pentagon can be identified as a Boeing 757 or directly linked to the actual plane, you know, NC-644AA, whatever it is. The investigations into the Pentagon, you have to really understand that it's different than World Trade Center. And they really have them dead to rights at the Pentagon. Okay, and it's based on the eyewitness testimony that would put you and I in jail, folks. And it was based on radar data provided by our own government. And these two things together, and I know I've said this repeatedly today, but this is the key, that these investigations together corroborate each other. And that is unique because in the World Trade Center, we don't have that. We have independent investigations that all work together, but nothing that teamed up and actually proved the other one correct. Okay, so if you believe in your government that they would tell you the truth about 9/11, then you would believe your government that they would provide the correct flight data recorder information to pilots for 9/11 truth. So if they're telling the truth on one, then they have to be telling the truth on the other, right? Then the Pentagon was not hit by a Boeing, based on their own evidence. Okay. Well, we ran out of time. Thank you for joining me here on the Devils in the Details radio show. This was an important one. I hope you listen, please. If you didn't, you know, go back, download this thing, replay it, keep this one in your archives, you know, and look at these two investigations. They are key. So for Wyme Russell and the Devils in the Details, I will be back next week to see you. Please join me. See you next week.
I was walking with the devil one day, handed me a cigarette and said...